Some folks are still trickling in. Maybe. Maybe not. Well, it looks like everybody's here for the most part. Yeah, I was going to mention that. I just said it there. I mean, and then I noticed this.
Okay.
There's something even bigger there.
Whichever.
Yeah. Whatever. So, gang, before we get started, we had mentioned yesterday, at any point in time, if somebody has a question, and I mean, people have been pretty good about, you know, coming up around the smoke pit or we're just catching us afterwards and asking a question if you do have one. But if you're too shy, we are going to do kind of a Q&A session at the very end of the day. So if you do have a question that you'd like to have answered, feel free to write it on a piece of paper. You can toss it in any one of these baskets right over here. More than welcome to. Don't rip a page out of your book. Oh, I mean, to wives? Okay, I'm not married. I just, you know. No. We'll find you a piece of paper if you really, really need it. Okay? I think, you know, it's always funny. I've said this more often than not. There's always three talks you're going to give. There's the one that I'm giving in my head when I'm on the plane. You know what I mean? Thinking about all the cool stuff that I'm going to say and show up and look, you know, hip, slick, and cool, that kind of stuff. There's the talk that I give, and then there's the one that I give when I'm on the plane ride home. Oh, man, I should have said this, I should have said that, blah, 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 you know what I mean? So it's kind of cool that we're interchanging because, you know what I mean, he capitalizes on some stuff that I miss. I might do the same, you know, that kind of thing. There are a couple of things. So we're going to get into the ninth step, but there's a couple of things that I do want to touch on that are pretty dang important. Going back to this fourth step, we're going to take it all the way back there. Oftentimes people will ask the question, do I need to put myself on my fourth step? Right? The answer is yes. Okay. On the top of, 60... Hold on a second. On the top of page 66, I think, it goes on to say, the usual outcome is that people continue to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Okay? So now if you're like me and your personal experience is in that my outside world is starting to get smaller and smaller, the people around me are dropping off. Nobody wants to be around me. Guess who I'm left with? I'm left with me. And now I get to stew in my own juices, right? And I end up getting caught in my own head. And I start to get in regret and remorse. And these things are like fire to the fuel of me going back out and drinking again. As a matter of fact, toward the latter days, toward the end game, I drank more and more over the stuff that I was pissed off with about myself. How could I have let my family down? How could I have done this, you know, to my wife? How could I have done this to the friends that I, you know, that I said that I cared about? Now I'm upset. And sometimes some of these resentments that we have towards other people end up coming back towards us, not always, but end up coming back towards us in that I could have handled the situation differently, and I'm more upset about myself not handling it the right way versus how the other person reacted. Hopefully that makes sense. So, you know, we sit down in front of another person, particularly someone that we may not be emotionally invested in, right, in as far as our instructions in the fifth step go, because if I sit down in front of my brother and do a fifth step, guess what? He may not be able to be entirely honest with me. He may not show me the truth, right? I may not be able to be entirely honest with him because I don't want to hurt his feelings, something like that, right? So we have to understand that we need to sit next to somebody that knows what we're driving at, that knows that we're on a life and death errand. And as John said, you know, it may be a priest, minister, rabbi, perhaps a therapist, somebody like that. But, you know, when the book was written, like he said, there weren't sponsors all over God's green earth like there is now. And so the more idyllic situation is to sit in front of somebody else who has already been through this experience. A majority of the fifth steps, I mean, I'll tell you this, if there's a name for it, it's been done, right? And oftentimes I use that as a tool whenever you know, a sponsee or a protege is about to go through this process, it's like, look, there's a name for it, it's been done, and there's a way out from that, right? There's a way to freedom for all of this kind of stuff. So in 6 and 7, I end up, I see all these glaring defects from the fifth step. Am I willing to have these things removed? It's a simple yes or no question. Am I willing or am I not? The answer is yes. Then I demonstrate that. I demonstrate this willingness by just asking in the form of a prayer. And I ask God, you know, please take away all of these things. And he's going to take away these things in his own time, like John had said. You know, sometimes these tools or some of these character defects in some way, I'm not sure how, might be useful to somebody else. You know what I mean? It may be the way I carry myself from the podium. It may be the way that I carry myself in real life or something like that. Something that somebody catches on to that might be somehow uniquely useful. Somehow God will show up in my life and use me as a tool in that regard. Right? It's not for me to know what God's plan is. It's just for me to go out there and continue to chop wood and carry water. Right? And that takes us to the next piece in the talk, which is going out and making amends. Right? It says on the top of 77, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Right? Oftentimes that sentence is misconstrued. Our main purpose is to be, is to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. But it doesn't say that. It says to fit ourselves. Right? This means I have to be placed in a position where I'm willing to be disciplined, because we're going to be getting into that shortly with 10, 11, and 12. The disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. So how do I fit myself? Right? By going out and repairing the damage done in the past. Right? By doing prayer and meditation, by continuing to take personal inventory, I fit myself. Right? So a lot of times, The amends process is one where sponsorship is absolutely key, right? Discussing some of these amends with other people, right, is really, really important. If I have no experience in a certain type of amends, you know what I mean? Let's say if that involves something like legal issues, the law, that kind of thing, jail time, whatever it might be, if I have no experience with that, guess what? If I have a protege in front of me, I'm going to turn him over to someone who maybe does have some experience with that. I had a guy who owed an exorbitant amount of money to the IRS. Guess what? I didn't owe the IRS any money, right? Especially a quantity of you know, that magnitude. But I know a friend who does, and I turned him on over here, to, you know, so that he could get the best, you know, the best help that he needed. Okay. So we have an 8-step list, and as John said, we get this list from our 4-step, but there may be people who are on here that no resentment is tied to, right? And what we're putting people on this list is harms that I have caused. No harm is greater than the other harm. A harm is still a harm, right? Did I do it or did I not? Drunk or sober? Oftentimes people will limit it to just the period of time that I was drinking. No. We need to go beyond that, right? We need to go well beyond that. Drunk or sober, did I cause harm? Right? And am I willing to go out and repair the damage done in the past? And the book gives us two qualifications or two conditions for making these amends, and we can find them on page 77. Right? It talks about the bottom of the first real paragraph. It says, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in our demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. Okay, so this is the first condition, right? That I have a sincere desire to set right the wrong. And this is where we have to look at our motives and our intentions. If my motive to go in and make an amends to somebody is to gain something from it, I'm back to being selfish again. Old behaviors have thus become very current behaviors. If I'm intending to rekindle a relationship, if I'm intending to get back into the big bed again, if I'm intending to get my job back, if I'm intending to, you know, do any of these things, guess who I'm thinking about? Me, right? My motives and intentions are in the wrong spot, right? Here's a big one. If my motive is to feel better, I need to go make these amends so I can feel better. Guess who I'm still thinking about? Right? I only need to have a sincere desire to set right the wrongs. Right? We go into a second condition for amends. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Okay? The book goes on later on to say that a remorseful mumbling that we're sorry doesn't fit the bill. By definition, amends means to make right, to correct the damage. I don't show up to anybody and say, I'm sorry. I don't show up to anybody and say, I apologize. Why? Because for several years, I had said those things. People know I'm sorry, right? I'm a sorry SOB, I'll tell you that much, right? So let's give an example. My hype man Norris is right here. So he's just front and center. So I'm going to have to, I'll pick on him. I hope you don't mind. Say I steal $100 from Norris, right? And I show up to him and say, Norris, I'm sorry I stole $100.
I want my money back.
Damn Skippy, right? I want my money. Does sorry fix it? No. No, I apologize. No, does that fix it? No, not at all. Right? I need to correct that damage. I need to fix that harm, right? And how I do that is by expressing my regret, right? And then I work out the best deal that I can in order to make that right, okay? And we'll go into specifics when it comes to that. But what we have to understand is that now I'm setting out on a path where I'm beginning to trust and rely upon God. And the first and foremost thing that I do right before I go make any of these amends is I bring God into it. I bring God into the fourth step. I bring God into the fifth step before we do it, so to make sure that God is with us. Bring God into six and seven. Before I start writing down this eight-step list, guess what? I bring God into it. God, whose name needs to be on this paper? Right? When I go into this nine-step amends process, and before I meet somebody physically, guess what I'm going to say? God, guide my spirit, guide my words, guide their ears and their hearts. Please allow me to, you know, to be a demonstration of your will. That kind of thing. Something along those lines. I mean, I just made that up, but something similar to that. And it's going to turn out the way that God decides that it's going to turn out, right? Doing that, I've not seen an amends go wrong. As long as we meet these two conditions, I have not seen an amends go wrong, even though they still might. The point is that I am the one who's showing up. I am the one who is willing to correct the damage that I had done in the past. What anybody else says, that's between them and God. All right? I've made the demonstration. Okay? But a couple of things come into play whenever we're making this approach. Okay? Like kind of similar to what John said, my amends list was long. It was really, really long. And, you know, I'm sitting with it. I kind of broke it into categories as my sponsor had taught me how to do. And, you know, we may not be able to think of everybody right off. I might go make amends to somebody and then all of a sudden, you know, they ask, hey, have you seen John or somebody like that? And it's like, oh, I owe amends to that guy too. Oh my goodness. You know what I mean? And God's going to show up in a bunch of different ways. I'm through prayer and meditation in the morning. People's names may come up, right? And as long as I'm willing to continue through the process, God will provide whoever he needs or whoever I need to make amends to whenever he sees that I'm fit and ready. My first initial list was probably, I want to say, like between 40 and 60 people, right? Which is, you know, I mean, I guess take it or leave it. It might be a decent amount for some. It might not be much for others. But that's what I came up with. That's what God gave me at the time, right? And I was able to break that down. And, you know, in hindsight, I kind of feel like the reason God gave me that is because if he gave me the full amount that I was to eventually do, he knew it would break my back. So he gave me what he gave me, right? To see if I was going to actually work toward it. And I absolutely worked toward it. Now, one thing that a lot of people may think of is direct harms, right? We do have direct harms, but what about indirect harms, right? There are people out there who had to clean up the damage from the stuff that I did, the wreckage that I caused, right, that I don't have a resentment towards, but people who still had to pick up the stuff, you know what I mean? Say, for instance, my wife's boss. Okay? My wife is too busy focused on me. She can't give a full day's work, right? She's got to leave work all the time to go pick up the kids. Okay? So she's because of me, she's robbing her employer of having a decent day's work, of being able to be focused on her job, right? I harmed her employer. Does this make sense? Right. I'm the one who helped, who robbed that employer of my wife being able to be a decent employee. You know, better yet, who did my wife turn to as a shoulder to cry on? Who are the people who had to pick up the pieces? Probably somebody like my mother-in-law, like her friends. You know, maybe I didn't physically, or not physically, directly harm her friends, but guess what? Now all of her friends have to lend an ear. They got to hear about her griping, you know, about her husband, her drunk-ass husband, one more time. You know what I mean? Taking time out of their busy day instead. So these are people that I've harmed indirectly. Think about it this way. If you keep missing keep missing your work shift, if I work at a restaurant, can't keep making it in because I'm drunk all the dang time, who has to cover my shift? I harm those people too. What if they weren't in a place to be able to cover the shift? You know what I mean? That kind of thing. Or my boss, you know, he's got to find somebody. Somebody else out there is harmed from the things that I've done, right? And we have to think of the full scope of all of these things. So let's say that we're going to make the approach. A few things have to happen first. First, I have to get in touch with this person, right? Most of the time, that may happen through a phone call, at least nowadays, right? I might get in touch with this person and say, hey, I'd like to just borrow 5 minutes of your time if you wouldn't mind if I come by and see you and talk about some things that happened in the past. Oh, yeah, sure. You know what I mean? Come by on Tuesday at 7:30 a.m. So guess what? If they say Tuesday, 7:30 a.m., where do I need to be? There, right? On a path of rigorous honesty, my word is now my bond, right? And I suit up and show up with a spirit of willingness. I need to be there at exactly that time. I keep my commitments. Now I had a lot of amends in the beginning, and so I had to kind of create a calendar. You know, okay, on Friday I'm going out and making these 3 amends. On Tuesday I'm going to be here and here and here. You know what I mean? And making sure that I didn't double book myself or something like that. You know what I mean? But there were certain. So what I'm doing is I'm arranging a time to be able to meet these people to make direct face-to-face amends. Right? And that's what the book asks us to do. Always direct. Always face-to-face. I'm not making amends over the phone. Right? I'm not making amends over text. Right? I'm not making amends over email. Right? Because how easy is it for somebody to just press delete? Right? It's very, very easy. When some of these people can't be reached, the book does give us some instruction. We write them a letter. We write them an honest letter. I've done a couple of those things, right? I couldn't get in touch with somebody, or they didn't want to see me at the time, right? So what did I do? I wrote these amends down in the form of a letter and sent it out to them. And guess what? They responded. Hey, you know, I'm glad that you did it this way. Thank you very much. You know what I mean? I wish you the best of luck. All's good. All's forgiven. You know? And that was pretty simple, right? But it was just a matter of doing it. It's exercising. The more amends that I make, the more faith that I get. The more faith that I get, the more connected to God I am. The more connected to his kids I am, the more connected I am to God. Does that make sense? And so if you think about it this way, now I'm in front of this person, right? Now I'm about to make the approach. So what do I need to do? I need to suit up and show up, like I just mentioned. I need to be the best representation of this big book that this person sees. Why? Because I may be the only representation of this big book that this person ever sees. Right? That means I ain't going to show up in a tank top and cutoffs. You know what I mean? In my Slayer t-shirt. You know? I love Slayer, but I'm not going to show up looking like that, okay? I'm going to show up similar to what I am. That doesn't mean you got to throw on a business suit. It's just look presentable. You know what I mean? Look presentable. And when I've arranged the meeting time, I'm out in front of this person. I kind of broke some of these things down through experience. And some of this may not be in the book, so you can take it or leave it. And if it can't be, at any point in time, you guys already know, if it can't be reconciled with the big book, feel free to disregard. All it comes from is from a whole lot of experience doing the same thing. I created an amends document outlining all the things that I'm probably going to discuss, because at some point in time, I ended up having like eight guys all at one time who were in the same spot. And so for the sake of giving an hour-long talk to each one of these guys, right, I created this document and I sent it all to them. And it's like, okay, now let's go through the guidelines. So I'm happy to send that out to anybody who wants it. Suffice to say that when I'm in front of this person, the first order of business is I'm going to thank them for their time. Thank you for your time. Thank you for taking time out of your busy day to be able to sit in front of me and hear what I have to say. Right? Second thing, I'm gonna basically give them a reintroduction. It's no secret that I was a slave to alcohol for a long period of time. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and as part of my recovery, my job is to be here and to repair the damage that I've done in the past. The third part, now I go into the actual amends. Norris, I stole your $100. That's not a way that a friend treats a friend. Right? I disrespected you. I disrespected our friendship. I was selfish. You probably needed that money, and I took it in a time that you probably could have used it more than I did. Right? I regret doing that. What can I do to make that right between us? That's an amends, right? I tell them what I did, I tell them that I regret it, what can I do to make it right? That's an amends. Right? Then I sit quiet and I let him talk. Whatever he says, it's whatever he says. The book tells us we don't retaliate, we don't argue, right? It's not for me to start, well, I mean, if you wouldn't have done this, then I probably, you know, wouldn't even be here to make amends. You know what I mean? No, none of that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? No. Their faults are not discussed, right? Because I'm there to clean off my side of the street. My side of the street. What kind of the things that I end up doing? Excuse me. And so, you know, I'm just going to pull this up real quick. So, a lot of things end up happening within this process. In the most important part, one of the most important parts, I'm not going to say one is equal, you know, greater than the other, but it's after I express my regret and I ask what I can do to make it right, the listening after that is absolutely important. Why? Because now they get an opportunity. They get an opportunity to say some of the things that they may have been holding on to for years, right? And this is where the amends process creates healing on both sides. Not only am I going out there to repair the damage that I've done in the past, but perhaps they have some of their own issues, you know, whether it's with me or whether it's with somebody else. But now they get an opportunity to put all of this stuff out on the table, right? And I listen. Again, I don't retaliate and I don't argue. Sometimes there may be some amends or part of the amends that I'm not really too clear on. A lot of us have lived our lives in a blackout. I know I did, right? So there may be some things that I've done that I'm not really too keen on or what, you know, awake to. And so what I may follow up with is, are there any other harms that I've caused you that I didn't mention today? And then I let them talk again. Right? Let them get it all out. Right? And then whenever we're done and they actually tell me what I can do to make that right, guess what? I spend every waking breath doing that. That is making an amends. And those are the things that I need to continue to do day in and day out, right? A lot of times people will think that they just get off scot-free when someone says, oh, you know what, just keep doing what you're doing, or take care of those kids, or you just take care of your family, whatever. You know what I mean? Oh, well, that's easy. You know what I mean? I can just go about. No, that's what I need to do, right? I made a commitment. I made a promise to that person if I was willing to make these things right, then that's exactly what I have to do. And I have to live up to that every single day. Right? We have this idea of living amends. Right? Living amends is probably one of the most misconstrued things in recovery. It's sometimes people use it as a cop-out to not actually make the amends. and I'll give you an example. Because the living amends that they talk about in the 12 and 12 is not the one that contemporary AA or recovery talks about, right? I think that just because I'm out there and I'm doing the next right thing and I'm going through the steps and stuff, that maybe I don't have to go back to my drug dealer and make an amends. Wrong, right? If I caused a harm, I correct the damage, right? I go off and I make amends to this person, regardless of whatever is going to happen. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean I get out of jail free card, okay? It means that I need to suit up and show up and get ready to go out there and start making these amends. The living amends part is doing exactly what they tell me to do to make it right. That's what I live. That is a living amends, right? It's not the cop-out or the excuse to not make the amends, okay? So after I've listened, the next thing that I do is I offer to be helpful, right? I tell them, I stay sober by helping other people who are struggling just how I was, just how I was struggling. So if you know anybody in your life who may be struggling the same way that I did, please give them my name and number, right? I offer to be helpful. Now, this is where some miracles really, really start to happen, right? One of three things is eventually going to happen, right? Well, four. Perhaps nothing happens. One of them is they may say, you know what? Where have you been? Or which, you know, whatever happened to you? So guess what? I get an opportunity to tell in a very general way what my story, you know, my story. What I was like, what happened, what I'm like now. In a very brief way. Right? Someone may end up saying, dude, my dad, he really needs help, right? My brother, my cousin, my sister, somebody like that, this, you know, somebody in their life needs help, and now I get an opportunity to be helpful, right? I get an opportunity not just to carry my message to them, the message, not my message, sorry, carry the message to somebody, but I also get an opportunity to be helpful to somebody else out there who's struggling. And another really, really cool part is somebody may ask the question, so what on earth is this alcoholism thing? Right? Now, this is pretty cool because what I get is the opportunity to bridge the division between misinformation and information. Think about it this way. You turn on TV, you see what is it, maybe CSI or Law and Order or whatever. Like, I like crime stuff. I don't know why. As you can already tell with the Forensic Files reference. But you see people in an AA meeting, and what are they all doing? Everybody's sitting around, you know, they've got their coffee. Somebody said earlier they got their own box of Kleenex next to them. You know what I mean? And any normal Joe out there thinks that this is what AA is. Is that what AA is? No, not even close, right? But now I get an opportunity to lay out the twofold illness. My body is a little bit different than the rest of the world out there. I react differently, right? I have an allergy to alcohol. Once I start, I can't control the amount that I take. And not only that, I have a mind that always takes me back to it despite all the consequences, despite the results. I get to inform somebody who is completely misinformed about what alcoholism is. Now that's a cool deal. That's a really, really cool deal. The more informed people are out there, right, the better the world ends up being, right? Because what we're also doing is we're promoting compassion. Someone who understands what the illness is, who hasn't read the book, guess what? Now they may have a little bit more compassion for their loved one. They may have a little bit more compassion for the homeless dude that they see on the street. You know what I mean? Because he's one of God's kids too. Understanding that it has nothing to do with my willpower, that it has nothing to do with my behavior, right? We can bridge that division. And we get a chance to bridge that division with all sorts of remarkable things later on in life, right? As we continue to go through the rest of the work. So, you know, if I get a chance to be helpful, I give them my name and number, and then I proceed to go through with helping whoever I need to. And then in closing, what am I gonna do is I'm gonna thank them again for their time. Thank you again for having me, right? Thank you again for taking the time out of your day, right? There was a point in time that, you know, I made an appointment with, say, two people who I knew were at a business, and I set out to just go make amends to those two people. But guess what? God had other plans that day, right? There were, I want to say there was six people at that business that I owed amends to. Guess what? When God shows up, God shows up. Most importantly, when the Spirit calls, guess where I'm going? Where the Spirit calls. I made amends to those two people, and guess what? I was doing drive-by amends to the rest of those people. You know, hey, bud, can I borrow a couple of minutes of your time? Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? How you been? Went straight through it again. Right. Six amends right there in like an hour. You know what I mean? This process, it's a five-minute process. Writing a letter, it's a five-minute process. I don't need to write out some long little diatribe or anything like that, just like we're talking about in the fourth step. No. Whatever I would say to you verbally, I write it down on paper, put a stamp on it, lick the envelope, go. That's it, right? The longer I'm talking, the more I'm going to justify my bad behavior, right? The same thing within a fifth step. And you know, there's a lot of different lineages out there have a process on how to keep track of them and all that kind of stuff. If you want to do note cards, super, knock yourself out, do some note cards. You know what I mean? Putting some people will put the person on there, put the name. The harm, where they may live, you know what I mean? That kind of stuff. Great. What they need to say, those are okay. You know what I mean? Totally cool stuff. But one thing that I will tell you is do not read off of the script. Don't read off of the card. If I've taken God with me, then I'm letting Him handle it. And I need to speak from the heart. Where does sincerity come from? It comes from the heart. It doesn't come from the mind. Right? It comes from my heart and it comes from my spirit. So if I'm standing in front of Norris here and say, Norris, when I took your $100, I was selfish. What do I sound like? A robot, right? A mindless robot, and I've taken the sincerity completely out of the equation, right? Do you think he really thinks I mean business? No. I had somebody make an amends to me this way. And they asked me what they could do to make it right. And I said, I tell you what you can do to make it right. Put the card down and tell me again. They were stunned, but guess what? Everything that came after that came from the heart. And that amends went swimmingly. You know what I mean? It went great because he spoke from the heart. And that's how we... That's what we're doing. We're not just bridging the division between misinformation and information. We're bridging the division of the soul, of the spirit, bridging the division between our connection to God's kids and God. The closer I am to God's kids, the closer I am to God. Right? That becomes prevalent in almost every single aspect of my life. Right? The closer I am to them. Why? Because God is not just going to speak to me directly. He may sometimes, but guess what? He may also speak to him through her. Speak to me through her. Speak to me through him. Speak to them through me. Right? And when I have that connection, guess what? I'm an empty vessel to be used however he sees fit. So, a couple of amends stories that I would like to share is... Well, before I get into some of that, you know, the ninth step says we make amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others, right? I am not the others. I'm not the others, right? But others may be involved, perhaps, in some of my indiscretions, right? So let's say that John and I rob a convenience store. I get sober. John's still out in the weeds. I get sober. I'm trying to get connected to the power. I decided that I need to go off here and then make some amends. And I want to go back to the store owner. I can't do that without securing his permission. Why? Because if I go show up there, oh yeah, I was part of a robbery, blah, blah, blah. Guess who I'm throwing under the bus? Throwing John. I need to secure his permission. A couple of specific things. I told you that, I ended up, the bar got set lower and lower. I didn't have any money, so guess what? I resorted to stealing. It's not something, again, that I'm proud of, but it's what I did. It's where this illness took me, you know? And I would steal from, not from like from people, but from businesses, whether if it was a, you know, a gas station or Walmart or whatever it might be. If they sold booze, guess what? I found a way to steal it, you know? And, wow, I just drew a blank. I'm thinking about where I was going to go with that. Dang it. Don't you hate it when that happens? It was going to be good, too. Oh, yes, my wife. Okay, thank you. Thank you, John. Somebody's paying attention, guys. No, so a couple of these convenience stores that I, or any of these establishments that I stole from, right? Anything could happen when I go back to make amends to these people. Anything could happen, right? They could get upset. They could call the police. I could get taken to jail. You know what I mean? Any of these things. And who would be affected? Not necessarily me, but my family, right? My wife may have to bail me out of jail. There may be money that needs to go to the kids. The kids wouldn't have a dad. I wouldn't be able to hold down a job or go to work so that I can continue providing for my family. So you see how that it affects other people. So I need to secure permission, right? Whenever it's going to affect somebody else, I need to secure that permission. So before I went to any of these stores to go make amends, I spoke with my wife. I said, honey, this may end up happening, right? They may take me in. I may have to go to jail. I don't know what that's going to look like, you know? And either way, I got her permission. She knew, she had found Al-Anon before I ended up getting sober, which was very, very fortunate because it helped me ease me toward the end. But she knew exactly what I had to do. She said, honey, you go out there and you knock it out. I'm like, all right. They drove me to my first financial amends when I went to the QT, right? Y'all have QTs here, right? Yeah. So, I mean, the story is that, you know, it wasn't nothing for me to show up with a QT bag, walk into the QT with my 8-month-old daughter on my hip, put a bunch of drinks in the bag, walk straight out, right? Not giving anyone ideas. It's only part of the story. But it wasn't anything for me to do that. And I robbed them blind. You know what I mean? With the facade on my hip, right? With camouflage. Oh, that dude's got a kid. He ain't gonna steal nothing. You know what I mean? You know, but I thought I was slick. That kind of thing. But I secured her permission. And in one particular instance, for example, we had a local grocery store. It was our family grocery store. We've been going there ever since we moved into the neighborhood. The manager knew us. The store owner knew us. They knew my kids. They knew my wife. They knew us all by name. You know what I mean? It's like I said, it's the family store, you know? And I thought, what better place to go steal from there? Because they're not going to know any difference. And day in and day out, for a period of, a certain extended period of time, I would go in there and, you know, get those, the box wines, you know what I mean? Those kind of things. I go in there, say four times a day, and I get four of them. You know what I mean? And so I had to make some calculations when I'm about to go out and make these amends. It's like, okay, for a period of a month straight, I would go in here four times a day, get exactly this amount. They cost this much, right? Plus interest, let's say. And, you know, I mean, I'm only like a couple of weeks sober by this time, and I'm out making these amends. And so math is hard. It's already hard enough for some people, but you know what I mean? When your eyes are still not really pointed in the same direction, it gets really hard. And so I tallied up all of this amount. The store owner had caught me and she kicked me out of the store. She said, don't ever come back. And I hadn't stepped foot in there until I finally got sober. And I called her up and I said, hey, I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes. Do you mind if I come by and just borrow a few minutes of your time? She said, absolutely. I showed up, and as soon as she walked out of the office, she knew, she saw it was me, right? And I'm sure she was probably going through her head, was like, oh boy, here we go. And I set her down and I told her, I said, look, you treated my family like royalty. This was our store. I robbed you out of having a good customer, apart from robbing you physically out of your inventory, right? I placed the other customers in danger. I did this, I did that. I want you to know that I regret that. I've tallied up some money of what I owe you from what I stole. Here's the money. Is there anything else that I can do to make that right? She started bawling. And I'm like, what did I say? What did I do? You know, and she said, honey, a lot of people may admit that they're wrong, but nobody ever tries to make it right. We walked, she said, come with me. We walked over to the register. She put the money in the register. She tallied it up, made a receipt, put it into inventory, whatever it might have been that she had to do. And she said, no, we're good. You and your family can shop in my store anytime. Right on. That's cool. In a matter of minutes, right, God showed up, right? All I was just, because it was life and death, I was willing to show up there and make, you know, make the approach, make things right. And God took care of the rest. I think it's, who is it, Tom I, who says, when faith and preparation collide, the results are what God can do, you know? It's only my job to suit up and show up, to go out there and do the action. The rest is what God does, right? It's not for me to know what God's plan is. It's for me to just put it into play. You know what I mean? By taking action, constant action. There were plenty of other people. I mean, I could go on and on about, you know, a gazillion different amen stories. And all of us have, you know, some similar experience with that. The point is that I'm out there doing it. And, you know, like I was telling you, in early sobriety, I wasn't as diligent with keeping track of who I had made amends to and who I didn't make amends to. And there were times that I made the approach twice. Not on purpose, but just because I didn't put a check next to the name. So I'd highly recommend doing that, right? Keep a checklist, right? Somebody was like, dude, you were here last week saying the same thing. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that you heard me. And so I started to keep a tally. And over, like, I would say, I don't know, maybe like a year or something like that, year and a half, I'm going through the list. And I'm still knocking people out. And I finally get to a point, and especially like I was talking about the indirect harms. My sponsor he kind of lit me up with that. Right, I had made all the direct amends, and he's like, well, wait a minute, you know what I mean? Have you considered the indirect harms? And it's like, oh boy, okay. So that increased my list, right? And through the process of prayer and meditation, that started to increase my list like exponentially, because I came to the realization that if I worked with you, I work in the film business as an assistant director, and part of my job is safety, right? I gotta keep everybody safe. Really hard to keep everybody safe when you're blacked out on set all the time, right? And so I put millions of dollars in jeopardy. I put people's lives in jeopardy. Not only that, I wasn't the most pleasant person to be around. Your life was not enriched by having me on set, right? And so it became clear that if I worked with you between a certain period of time, 2012 to 2015, guess what? I probably owe you an amends, you know? And so I'm tallying all this up, and it's getting overwhelming. And through that process that we talked about kind of breaking it into the columns and stuff, you know, I knocked out the easy ones, the low-hanging fruit. And when I did that, the ones in the middle column weren't so difficult, you know. And then I started making those ones in the middle column. And guess what? The ones that were difficult didn't seem so difficult at that time, right? But we have to understand that, you know, there are people out there who need to see a demonstration of me doing this, right? Me getting sober day one and trying to go make amends to my wife probably ain't gonna fly, right? Probably isn't going to be as sincere. And sometimes the people who are closest to us, we might need to hold off just a little bit. We might need to just tap the brakes. I'm not saying wait months, weeks, years, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. I'm not saying that, because we have to knock these things out. But they need to see that we're on the path. They need to see that things are different. Because it says a remorseful mumbling that we're sorry ain't going to fit the bill. If I just show up immediately and say I need to make amends to you, they haven't seen any demonstration of anything prior to that, you know. And this goes for the people who were closest to me. It might be my boss. It might be my parents. It might be my wife. It might be my brother. You know what I mean? They need to see me out there chopping wood, carrying water, doing the things necessary to continue to live to survive today. And so, you know, I had this long laundry list of amends that I had made, And, you know, I'm getting toward the end of this list, and I see that I've tallied up all the ones, and I call my sponsor, and I'm like, JK, check it out, dude. So I kind of did some book work and stuff, and it looks like I've made, up at that time, it was like 175 face-to-face direct amends. And I mean, thinking that I'm calling and kind of bragging about it, hey, I did, you know, made all this. And he goes, oh, so you're happy about that? And I'm like, well, I mean, I made some amends, just did what I was supposed to do. And he said, Jared, think about it this way. You screwed over 175 of God's kids, right? He said, but guess what? That's badass. Go out there, keep knocking them out. Right? And because I did that, and now what I'm sitting on right now is one amend that I'm consciously aware of, and this person won't see me, right? I can't get in contact with this person, and that's all I'm sitting with, right? Sometimes we may need to make amend. Real quick, one pause. The food's not here yet, is it? It is? Okay, are you waiting to bring it in? Is that what it is? Okay. Sorry to break from that. I just didn't know they're waiting on me. I'll wrap it up because it's getting to be about that time. Where was I? Sorry, I just broke my own concentration. Yes, one amends that I'm consciously aware of, right? And if I'm waiting for the right time to go make certain amends, right, then I'm waiting on self. I'm waiting on me to feel right to do it. And one important thing that if I could leave you with this entire weekend is that recovery will not show up the way that I want it to. Recovery will never show up the way that I want it to. Sitting in treatment or sitting in detox, sitting in the gutter, thinking about what freedom looks like, what I experience is far beyond what I would ever thought it was. And it never showed up the way that I thought it was going to be. It wasn't, you know, peaches and cream and all of this kind of stuff. No, it took some action, right? It took some diligence. It took some love. But it was much better than going back to what I was normally doing. It's much better than death, right? And that's how I approach each and every one of these amends. It's either do this or go back to doing what I was doing. And going back to doing what I was doing leads me to death. So it's either this or die. And it's like that with anything, right? And that's why we hit step one home so much, not to take it back to the very beginning, but everything leads back to step one. You're sitting in treatment, folks come in, they start talking about step one again, or if we do that, you know what I mean? You see people's eyes just rolling, we talk about step one again. This is all we ever talk about. Well, like I said yesterday, if I don't know what the problem is, what good is the solution? Not only that, when I approach any of the latter steps and I have an issue with that step, it's not an issue with that step. It's a step one problem. Don't want to go off and make amends? Not a ninth step problem. That's a step one problem. Don't want to go off and carry the message? Don't want to get off my butt and go find somebody instead of floundering in a meeting just waiting for them to come to me? It's not a 12-step problem. That's a step one problem. Got an issue with God? No, you don't. That's a step one problem. Step one spells disaster. And like I said yesterday, it's a catalyst for everything else that we do with the rest of the work. And that's why we do it rapidly. Because when that desperation wears off, what good is any of this stuff? I don't want to do it. I got my own plans now. Right? So again, if you have any questions, write it on a piece of paper, fold it up if you'd like, toss it in there. Or if you want to come talk to us privately, that's totally cool as well. We'll take another break. I think we'll be back at what, 1:30, I think. Everybody, enjoy your meal. All right. Thank you very much for listening. See you in a minute.